The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Teen Vogue. Most of the articles for today will fall under the category of entertainment, although I may have time for one separate current events topic. The first article is titled, Hwasa of Mamamoo releases Maria music video. This is by Benedetta Gido and was published June 29th, 2020. Mamamoo member Hwasa has finally released her first full solo mini album, Maria. And on the title track, she's unafraid to face her critics and come out on top. Hwasa, whose real name is An Hee-jin, is the youngest member of Mamamoo. She previously made her solo debut last year with the song Twit. On June 29th, she released the song Maria, titled after her baptismal name, with an accompanying music video that unpacks her experiences with fame and mental health. Prefaced by haunting teasers and soulful intro track, Nobody Else, Maria is a message from Hwasa to Hwasa. Maria is an album that I put emotions into, like you would in a diary. It's the product of my sweat and tears, she said to the Korean Herald. The message of Maria and its music video are very much linked to her sweat and tears. Hwasa has been a constant target for online criticism and trolling for years. If you really want to see me cry, here, tears, she sings, per a fan translation. In the music video, Hwasa crouches in a corner with sharp pencils aiming at her like daggers, a metaphor for all the cutting comments that have been thrown at her. She has previously been outspoken about the scrutiny she faced around her body. There's a frequently circulating clip in which Hwasa opens up about being body shamed in auditions, even though her singing was praised. If I don't fit in this generation's standard of beauty, then I will have to become a different standard, she said while on stage. There's a sadness buried under the uplifting beats in Maria, Hwasa told the Korea Herald. And yet the song's message is not to be found in that sadness, but rather in Hwasa's self-assurance that she remains unapologetically herself, strong in her identity and secure in her work and talent. Oh, Maria, these are words for you. Why are you struggling? You're already beautiful, she sings. If she's encouraging herself to become a different standard and wowing everybody in the process, she's also encouraging fans to do the same. Ultimately, Maria is an honest reflection of being under an intense spotlight and a powerful reminder to herself not to lose her sense of self because of that. Further, the music video concludes with a sweet homage to Hwasa's Mamamoo groupmates, who also appear in the Twit music video. In the music video's final scene, Hwasa sits alone in a room before the door opens and Solar, Moonbyul, and Wiyin appear, all bearing gifts and bright smiles, a final image of hope, as well as a celebration of the support among them. The next article is titled, On K-Pop Fans, Political Activism, and the Necessity of Nuance. And just in case you don't know, K-pop is a genre of popular music that originated in South Korea. This article is by P. Claire Dodson and was published on June 24th, 2020. In the past few weeks, K-pop has taken on a new place in American political discourse. Fans, once written off as rabid teenage girls, are now being taken seriously as agents of political change in the social media age. Well, sort of. The recent wave of positive media coverage began after the police killing of George Floyd. Globally, fans used fan cams of their favorite idols to spam police surveillance apps and racist hashtags, while also encouraging each other to donate to anti-racist, pro-black organizations. This weekend, hype around K-pop fans and TikTok users reached another peak when a narrative slipped around Twitter that fans had registered for tickets to President Trump's Tulsa rally to artificially inflate numbers. The turnout was 6,200 people in a 19,000-person arena, and a second rally was completely canceled. On June 20th, U.S. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted, "K-pop allies, we see you and appreciate your contributions in the fight for justice, too." The wave crested again the morning of Monday, June 22nd, when two broadcast media moments went viral simultaneously. In the first, Fox News reported that the Trump rally reported on the Trump rally, saying, "And there were these reports that teenagers on TikTok and fans of the group K-pop took credit because they reserved a bunch of tickets never intending to show up." By accidentally calling the group K-pop instead of naming specific artists, though, as several people on Twitter pointed out, there coincidentally was an early 2000 group called K-pop, Fox News inadvertently addressed a crucial issue from the past few weeks. K-pop fans are not identical. In the second moment, actual K-pop group Tomorrow Times Together, known as TXT, did a live interview with local Fox affiliate program Good Day New York. In it, the interview anchor brought up the Trump rally directly to them. The members of TXT, who all hail from Korea except for Huining Kai, who was born in Hawaii but grew up abroad and now lives in Korea, looking visibly uncomfortable. Which makes sense, considering that the relatively young TXT, they debuted just last year, was being asked to explain the actions of hundreds of thousands of people, many of whom aren't necessarily TXT fans, as well as the actions of a president who is largely not their own. Together, the two moments presented the ultimate version of the common media narrative from the past few weeks, that K-pop fans are a united, positive, and surprising force for change, and should be memed, celebrated, and analyzed as such. But in creating a monolith out of K-pop fans, the conversation has pivoted to just another way to not take them seriously. Like any other part of fandom culture, nothing about K-pop is united or progressive, says Ahomari, one of the hosts of 106 in Seoul, a Black K-pop podcast, which started in January of this year with an episode comparing BOA's 2009 English debut album to Britney Spears' 2007 album, Blackout. K-pop can be political when world issues arise, but being a K-pop fan is literally just a fan of K-pop. Adam, who runs the popular BTS fan account, mentions that recent coverage has theorized that K-pop fans stood in solidarity with Black Lives Matter because they face similar hardships, a theory that is far from true but also disrespectful, he says. This take also ends up overlooking the fact that there are Black, Indigenous, people of color fans who face these injustices, hence why they may speak up. On a similar note, Ahomari describes how anti-racism work within K-pop is largely being done by Black K-pop fans, but they often aren't the face of the resistance within the fandom. It's been disheartening watching the conversation of K-pop fans be praised for fighting against racism and supporting Black Lives Matter, they say. I say that because the face of that is majority white and non-Black. Though Ahomari acknowledges the success of movements like the one that crashed the Dallas surveillance app, they feel that the larger discussion continues to leave out Black fans. A big recent example is the White Lives Matter hashtag takeover, which Business Insider also called attention to in their recent coverage as an action with counterproductive consequences. You're just trending their message with a fan cam attached, Ahomari says. The way that some white K-pop journalists write about fandom and its culture perpetuate the narrative that black fans are fighting against culture currently. It feels like black fans are collateral damage just to sell the idea of unity, fandom, and K-pop. Aside from the conversation is the response from non-fans about productive fan activities, says Dr. Candace Epp Robertson, an assistant professor of English at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, in the field of rhetoric and literary studies. When BTS fans matched BTS's $1 million donation to Black Lives Matter earlier this month, the common tone was one of congratulatory disbelief and surprise, as if it's shocking that fans can have a conscience. Yes, I am ARMY, which stands for Adorable Representative MC for Youth, but that doesn't mean I check my other commitments at the door, Epp Robertson says. For me, part of what drew me into BTS were their messages around social cultural issues. I realize that not everyone is entering this fandom because they want to be engaged in politics, but for some of us, the music is an invitation to consider bigger issues and think about our place and actions in the world. As Adam puts it, online activism isn't uncharted territory for many K-pop fandoms. It's also not uncharted territory for fandoms throughout history, as Dr. Casey Fiesler, who researches social computing, law, ethics, and fan communities at the University of Colorado Boulder, as he noted in a recent thread examining fandom history. Fiesler and PhD student Brianna Dim recently published an article on privacy and ethics in fandom research. Mostly, I want to see fandom respected, taken seriously, and treated with care, Fiesler tells Teen Vogue. It's been dismissed and even stigmatized for a long time. But the things that people do in fandom are really amazing. Whether it's writing novel-length stories that are better than a lot of published work, or building hugely successful platforms from scratch, or coordinating to help the world. Fan studies and fan scholarship delve into so many different facets of what it means to like what you like and mobilize around it online. Clearly, there's more to unpack than one article or news segment can tackle, even this one. Recent Western media coverage can feel like the other side of the all K-pop fans are screaming teenage girls generalization. Now, the summary is that all K-pop fans are magnanimous and politically motivated teens, systematically taking on inequalities wherever they find it. These narratives also tend to leave out the vast number of fans in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Both blanket statements do fans and onlookers an injustice. To see nuance and complexity is to see opportunities for growth and lessons learned. Further, it's a massive conversation. Dynamics in fandom are multi-layered, with inside jokes, funny memes, and anti-racist movements paired right alongside entrenched biases, xenophobia, doxing, and continued racism. The same fans who have Black Lives Matter on their display name and bio are the same ones being abusive toward Black fans online, Ahomari says. The conversation has been hijacked when we, the actual Black people who are also K-pop fans, are the ones fighting for our lives while also combating the abuse from non-Black K-pop fans who only see us as something trendy to care about, something to gaslight, and something to harass. Epps Robertson acknowledges the difficulty of having complex conversations on Twitter, where harassment is rampant and listening is uncommon, but she has seen some cases where they are happening. As someone who studies rhetoric, in particular rhetoric connected to social justice, I am most fascinated by the efforts I've seen amongst ARMY, which is a sub-fandom of K-pop, who are working to have really complicated conversations online, Epps Robertson says. When there was a concerted and coordinated attempt to help trend hashtag Black Lives Matter, I saw efforts being made to help educate people on the movement and the larger history of race in America. Perhaps non-participants will never wholly understand the distinct paradoxical joys and disappointments at play in fandom, and conversations happening inside the fandom will always be more nuanced than those happening outside it. But fans themselves can take this momentum, however uncomfortable, and use it to enact actual change within their own circles. I can't say that there's a one-size-fits-all approach for these problems, and certainly can't speak for all fandoms, but I do hope people will continue to address these issues by acknowledging their presence, recognizing their complexity, and listening to people who are doing the work to address these issues, Epps Robertson says. For me, that means that I'm not just listening to academics. I have to listen to other fans, many of whom have been in these spaces addressing these issues for far longer. Okay, continuing on with the theme of entertainment, the next article is titled Ryan Destiny Shares Advice for Young Black Women in Hollywood. This is by Jessica Castillo and was published June 5th, 2020. When Grown-ish star Ryan Destiny caught up with Teen Vogue in February, she told culture and entertainment director Danny Quateng Clark that all she ever wanted to do is sing and act. "I never thought of anything else," she said at the time. "I wasn't a kid that wanted to do 50 different things." And as she's now telling fans, that drive wasn't without hurdles and pain. On Thursday, June 4th, the actor posted a letter to her Instagram for her Black women followers. "This message is for my fellow Black sisters in particular," she began, adding that her advice goes for any career or workspace, but I'm speaking from my own experience. "If you're just now entering Hollywood in any form or plan to, and at some point experience discrimination, appropriation, racism, colorism, microaggression, even if sometimes sadly from your own people, speak up for yourself," she urges, explaining that every time she found herself lost or found herself lost for words, she would feel frustrated. Ryan also told fans not to brush it off, to keep a job, or not to make a powerful person angry. "You hold your own power. Know your worth." Ryan, who has been working steadily toward her goals for a decade and starred in the TV show Star for 3 seasons before its cancellation, told people in her letter, "You are allowed to feel how you feel when you know something is wrong. You want to be seen and heard. And it can feel like sometimes you're screaming so loud when others pass by blindly as if they see nothing." She also told Black women to protect the projects they're proud of and which feel true to their experiences. Ryan further promised to use her voice every time she needed to, and that she would no longer stay silent for fear of being ostracized. I will not continue to wait for someone to speak up for me or point out issues," she said. "I will stand up for me and the ones that I need. I will stand up for me and the ones that need it in these rooms and spaces, 100 times more than ever before. Social media support is not going to cut it. Keep that same energy in real life. That is the only way true change will happen." She closed the letter with a powerful call to action. "So, to whoever's reading this, you want change? Hold yourself and others accountable. We must continue to be heard in every single space. The letter has received support from Amber P. Riley, who told Ryan, "I'm so freaking proud of you," on Twitter. The letter comes after a week of protest tied to unlawful deaths of Black people due to police brutality. In addition to Ryan's letter, Riverdale actress Vanessa Morgan pledged to hold Hollywood accountable for how they portray Black characters. Up next for Ryan is a role starring in Flint Strong, a biopic about Clarissa Shields, the first African-American woman to win an Olympic gold medal in boxing, and one of the only 7 boxers ever to win all 4 major boxing world titles. As Teen Vogue previously noted, the film will mark Oscar-nominated cinematographer Rachel Morrison's directorial debut, and it was written by Oscar winner Barry Jenkins. In February, Ryan hinted that it will definitely be an entirely different side of me that nobody's seen before. I think that will be the beauty in it. And hopefully, if I do it right, it can blow people away. All right, so I think that was our last entertainment-themed article. The next one is more current events. This article, still in Teen Vogue, is titled, "How to Be an Activist When You're Unable to Attend Protests. There's More Than One Way." This is by Amnesty International USA and was published on May 31st, 2020. So there is a note at the beginning of the article that says, "Teen Vogue's Civil Disclosure 101 features Amnesty International USA staff members who answer questions from young activists as part of its #RightToProtest series. And you're able to submit your own questions to be featured in any upcoming column that is shown on Tumblr. So the question from an anonymous activist says, "I am disabled and have severe claustrophobia. Is there any other way I can help besides showing up to rallies and marches?" And here is the answer. "First, thank you for your activism and for giving voice to the fact that people with disabilities are too often not included when protests are planned. Nonviolent direct action, including attending a march or a rally, can be a powerful way to speak out on an issue you care about. But it's just one of many ways to have an impact. The Women's March on Washington has been touted as the largest single-day demonstration in recorded U.S. history, and the online disability march was an important component of it. Social movement strategies that include large public events often employ other tactics as well, such as educational events, fundraisers, artistic components, legislative advocacy, social media engagement, and more. And there are roles for everyone to play. Here are some tips for ways to show up when you aren't able to show up in person, as well as suggestions for all of us for building more inclusive movements for social justice and human rights. Number one, learn about the issues. If you're interested in an issue but can't go to the rally, spend some time learning about the topic and the groups organizing the event. Spend some time on their websites and sign up for email alerts. This way, you'll be in the loop when there are other opportunities that feel like a good fit for you. Share what you learn and have conversations with your friends, family, and classmates about why you care about the issue. Movement building happens one person at a time, and one-on-one conversations are a great way to support issues you care about. Number two, volunteer. Each of us have unique skills to offer, and movements need everything. Childcare, web design, phone banking, outreach, legal aid, and letters to the editor are just a few of the 100 ways people contribute. Think about what you have to offer and share that skill with groups and organizations. Get active on social media. Look for groups and organizations on social media that share your beliefs. you can repost and promote their work and engage your own online community around the issues. Share action alerts, news, and other updates. Remember, use hashtags when they're trending in order to join the larger conversation. You can also start your own blog to share news and updates on issues you care about. Take action. Rallies and marches are effective if they get the attention of someone with the power to make a change. This is sometimes called the target of the campaign. Use your voice to contact them directly, either by phone, personal email, mailed letter, or even Twitter. This is often an elected official, such as a member of the city council, a congressperson, or even the president of the United States. And you can use your resources like Ballotpedia to get the contact information of everyone from your local school board members to White House officials. Look for organizations with clear calls to action. They will tell you who you should contact and what you should say. Ask others to take action with you to amplify your voice. Donate. If you're able, make a donation to a cause you care about. Do your homework to make sure the organization is in line with your beliefs and decide what you can afford to give. If you also hold a fundraiser for the cause, bake sale, online fundraiser, and other activities can all raise money for important work. And lastly, ask for what you need. Social justice movements will only be effective when they are inclusive of everyone, and event organizers should be aware of and responsive to the needs of the disability community. If you feel comfortable, contact the event organizer. Let them know what you will need in order to participate. And if you are an organizer yourself, make sure you're considering accessibility as broadly as possible. Disabilities are as diverse as our communities, and not everyone will have the same needs. This is a great list of tangible steps to take in making your work more accessible. Social change work requires that we commit for the long haul. In the end, what matters is that we work toward the world we want to see each and every day, and that we participate in ways that work for us, in solidarity. All right, and that is my time for this week's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. Again, I'm Bahati Mutisia, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.